ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Bhagavatam 6th Canto, Chapter 17, Text 11.
Shri Parvati Uvacha, Ayam Shri Parvati Uvacha, Ayam Kim Madhuna Loke, Ayam Kim Madhuna Loke, शास्ता दंडधर प्रभु अस्मद्विधानां दुष्टानां अस्मद्विधानां दुष्टानां निर्लज्जानां च विप्रकृत निर्लज्जानां च विप्रकृत।
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The goddess Parvati said, Alas, has this upstart now received a post from which to punish shameless persons like us? Has he been appointed ruler, carrier of the rod of punishment? Is he now the only master of everything? Text 12. There is no purport.
न वेद धर्मं किल पद्मयोनिर् न ब्रह्मपुत्रा भृगुनारदाद्यः न वै कुमारः कपिलो मनुश्च येनो निषेधन्त्यतिवर्तिनं हरम्।
Translation: Alas, Lord Brahma, who has taken his birth from the lotus flower, does not know the principles of religion, nor do the great saints like Bhrigu and Narad, nor the four Kumaras headed by Sanat Kumar. Manu and Kapila have also forgotten the religious principles. I suppose it to be because of this that they have not tried to stop Lord Shiva from behaving improperly. Text 13.
Eshamanudheya padabja yugmam jagadgurum mangalamangalam swayam yakshatrabandhu paribhuya surin prashasti drishtastadayam hidandya.
Translation: This Chitraketu is the lowest of Kshatriyas, for he has impudently overridden Brahma and other demigods by insulting Lord Shiva, upon whose lotus feet they always meditate. Lord Shiva is personified religion and a spiritual master of the entire world, and therefore Chitraketu must be punished.
Purport.
All the members of the assembly were exalted Brahmanas and self-realized souls, but they did not say anything about the conduct of Lord Shiva, who was embracing the goddess Parvati on his lap. Chitraketu nonetheless criticized Lord Shiva, and therefore the opinion of Parvati was that he should be punished. Seeking the blessings of all the senior devotees present here, especially Srinathji Prabhu, Nartaki Mataji and others. For our Marathi BBT project, we are just working on the 6th canto, and in one discussion with the other team members, this point came up of cursing, counter-cursing, and especially misunderstanding. This incident which we are currently reading happens to be like a trifle, not a very serious thing. Somebody has taken his wife on his lap and is having a discussion, and someone else who is also on friendly terms just bursts out laughing. And the wife doesn't take it kindly. And here she is. And she's no ordinary female. She is Parvati, the personification of the entire material energy. And my, how angry she is. She is saying in verse 11, which we read today here, Ayam kim adhuna loke shasta danda dharap prabhu. Hey, this fellow is a puny mortal, is a human being. Has he been appointed loke in this world? The shasta means the supreme controller, danda dhara, having the rod of punishment, and prabhu, the owner, asmad vidhanam dushtanam, and of course for shameless people like us. Now we know that when she is calling herself that, she is meaning Chitraketu, because in the previous verse, Chitraketu is hinted as being shameless. Has he been appointed the ruler or the carrier of the rod of punishment? Is he now the only master of everything? And then she cites that how come Chitraketu has some problem with the behavior of my husband? When? Now read his list. Lord Brahma, Bhrigu, Narada, Kumaras, Manu, Kapila, they have no problem with Lord Shiva. They haven't sort of rectified his behavior. They haven't taken him in private and said that, my dear Lord Shiva, look, you know, we know your mind has nothing in it and it's all okay, but then don't do it like that so publicly. No. And if it could be for one person, like Brahma is Lord Shiva's father, not technically, but in a historical sense. But what about others? The four Kumaras, the Narad Muni, Kapila, they haven't lost sense. And in the 13th verse, she is saying that this fellow is the lowest of Kshatriyas. Now she is hitting him back. For he has impudently overridden Brahma and other demigods by insulting Lord Shiva, upon whose lotus feet they always meditate. Lord Shiva is no ordinary personality. Lord Shiva is personified religion. He is Mangala Mangalam. Prabhupada is writing here, personification of the topmost religious principle. And he is a spiritual master of the entire world. Therefore, I am he dandya. This fellow needs some punishment. Sometimes, in a euphoric state of mind, you're very happy, whatever, for various reasons. Or not exactly happy, but just that state is not beneficial for you. You need to be punished. I don't know where we were going. It was a yatra. Must be Mathura station or something like that. I just remembered this incident. There was a family and the train was late. And there was a family waiting along with all of us. And one child was very mischievous. And this girl, maybe 8-9 years old, was always going around playing pranks. And her mother tried to stop her by warning, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Obviously, she was getting great pleasure by doing that. So she was teasing children her age. And then she started pushing something. Some things kept on tumbling. Something kept on crashing. So finally, her mother caught her and said, do you understand? Stop this mischief. And since it was so close by, I was just watching it. And she started laughing. She was just gleefully taking it. So her mother slapped her once. She continued to laugh. Then she gave her another hard one. And now she thought it's serious. So her laughing stopped. And then came the last one. Whack! Now it was pain plus the insult. And started crying. And she sulked in a corner. I thought maybe that's what the mother wanted. So, since nothing could work, no verbal instruction or nothing, this punishment had to be done. And as a mother, she had the right. At least that stopped her from continuing the mischief. This is also the intention of any spiritual authority that punishment is never for punishment's sake. It is always for a purpose. The purpose is never understood by the recipient of the punishment. Because in that euphoric state, you may never understand. So today, I was meditating on one particular thing. The theme is misunderstanding. Now, I don't know whether it could be popular with many people, because people want, hey, we come to a satsang just to clear up misunderstanding. But then there is a big reason. I was told by one Christian friend, and I also read it somewhere, that according to biblical teachings, humankind, man, human society is in sin, disobedient towards God, and God wants something as a sacrifice. Now, God is pure. He won't accept anything less than pure. As He is pure, He will accept 100% pure. So, instead of asking one human being to sacrifice his life or his energy, knowing fully well that human society is not capable, God sent His own Son, that you be part of human society, and then you perform that supreme sacrifice. I'll accept it. And using that as a modicum, using that as a method, this will be the way for others to follow. I like this understanding. It resonates with so many similar themes in Vedanta. Simplest thing is, when we do Ganga Puja, what can we offer Mother Ganga? She's a supreme pure. So they say, okay, take some water in your joint palms from Ganga Devi herself and offer it to her as puja. Now, what was added to Ganga? Nothing. You took from her, you offered it to her. But you get the benefit of doing some puja. Similarly, Krishna also never accepts anything which is impure. It can't. Just like, if something enters fire, when fire enters fire, you find they both combine. But if a matchstick enters fire, you find the matchstick getting burnt, because it doesn't have the quality to sustain itself in fire. Similarly, any impurity, if it enters Krishna or transcendence, it has to be burnt. It has to be by nature. So therefore, this particular thing, misunderstanding, is a specialty of this material world. There should not be, and there cannot be, any misunderstanding, at least in the spiritual world. Spiritual satsangas or communities are like the prototype. Just like pilots are trained on simulators. They simulate the cockpit, they simulate landing, and that's how they get trained. So for sadhakas, living in a spiritual community is like a prototype or training ground for living in an actual fully spiritual atmosphere. But then, if the question is raised, if in spiritual communities you have misunderstandings, if devotees cannot get along with each other, then where do we go? We go back to the karmis for help? What happens when you tell a doctor, maybe a psychiatrist, that I don't seem to concentrate on my chanting, I can't chant properly? He will say, give it up. Who told you to do in the first place? It's very dangerous. Why? He has no grounding. He may not even know why somebody is doing something. Of course, when we mean psychology or psychiatry, we mean the Western way of understanding the human mind and its connection with the body. And this is only 250 years old, when scientists or psychologists, as they came to be called, started dabbling in the field of whether there is a mind-body connection. When psychology was found to be deficient, it only related to the mind, then they had to branch out to psychiatry with mental disorders. And psychiatrists are the one who are prone to having most mental disorders, because they hang out with such kind of people every day in, day out. It's a fact. They have the highest rate of suicides among professionals in the first world. And India, we had no problems with... I mean, we didn't have no problems. We had problems. But on and off going to a psychiatrist was certainly unheard of. Now you check out any newspaper and there are so many... what they call agony aunts. You have some agony and then somebody's there to caress you, somebody to tell you, okay, do this, do that. So in the Bhagavad Gita, very first chapter, Srila Prabhupada takes this topic like this bull by the horn. He says, misunderstanding is a typical material phenomenon. And Arjun, in his refusal to fight, is showing misunderstanding. So, if somebody is just reading the Gita for the first time, he may feel that, okay, here is a very different way of looking at it. Arjuna is feeling compassion. Arjuna is saying, I won't fight because it will lead to bloodshed and it's bad. Why should people die for my sake? And Prabhupada is saying, this material compassion is a sign of weakness of heart. And we say, oh, is that true? So in order to show boldness of heart, you just go and kill your relatives? No. That's not the intention. So therefore we have to understand the whole thing in proper perspective. Misunderstanding is a part of material life. Or conditioned life. Conditioned life has four pillars, four defects. Brahma, Pramad, Vipralipsa, Karana Patava. Our tendency to be illusioned. Our tendency to commit mistakes. We have imperfect senses. And then we have a tendency to cheat. No need to look at he or she or they. You can check your own life. Do you think you have never committed a single mistake in your life? Have you? Or your senses are perfect. Or you don't have a tendency to get illusion. Or you have never cheated anyone. Of these, which is the most dangerous? Cheat? Now those who said cheat, did you read the purport? No, but you just felt like that, right? Be honest, you felt like that. Just see, even without technical understanding, you know. If somebody is not perfect, his senses are not perfect, he's committing mistakes, or he sometimes gets illusion, that's not as bad as this person is a cheater. You say, oh, that's... Like there is a folk story about somebody going to the other village for a match. Match is alliance. The girls' party wanting to find out the boy. So they inquire whether, does he gamble? He said, no. They ask him, do you go after other women? He said, no, never. Do you do any shady dealings under the hand or whatever? No, no. But you must be having some problem or some blemish, some defect. So he says, I lie. Wow. That's the most dangerous. Now you can't trust anything. If you say that, well, I gambled once, or I made a mistake once, or I did this. But lie, you cheat, that's very dangerous. So therefore, cheating propensity, kaitava. Kitava is the cheating propensity. Kaitava dharma is cheating religion, where you don't know the ultimate end. So therefore, this misunderstanding is peculiarly the result of the interaction of the three modes. When Krishna had just left the planet, and Yudhishthira Maharaj, this was not exactly Dwapar Yuga and not exactly full-scale Kali Yuga either. It's a Yuga Sandhya when they are joined. And Yudhishthira Maharaj observed something peculiar, something very strange. Jimma prayam vyavaritam, shathya mishram cha savridam, pitra matra surid bhratra dampatinam cha kalkanam. He says, what's this? Jimma prayam, almost all the dealings between whom? Pitra matra, father, mother, friends, brothers, even between husband and wife, the dealings are all characterized by cheating. Now this he saw when Yudhishthira Maharaj was personally present, and he could understand that if cheating has come, that means Kali is now prominent. And just check for yourself, can you live without cheating nowadays? In fact, the most expert, the cheater, he gets top dollar. He's like the boss, he's like the king, he's the leader of the pack. And people might say, it's folly to be wise, it's useless to be very having integrity today. So that is this Kali Yuga. So misunderstandings are a prominent factor in material life. Many times we say, why doesn't he understand? Why doesn't she understand? Or why me? It's all a misunderstanding. There are so many novels written, so many movies made about the wrong man being caught. And it's very popular. We like to identify ourselves with someone who is a victim of misunderstanding. Now we come to the other part. Why misunderstanding in spiritual life? We'll take two examples. We'll also see whether Krishna has any hand, like a foreign hand in these things, whether there is somebody else who's trying to do these things. And if he does, what for? What's the purpose? The first example is of a very saintly person. His parents didn't have children for a long time. They named him Dukhi Krishna. Sad. It's a sort of a tradition in India that I had asked once Radha Krishna Prabhu, and he had explained that even in the Sindhi community, I have seen it everywhere, if children die prematurely, they call the one newborn as Garib Das. That hopefully he is Garib, he should be spared. So, Garib means poverty stricken. Or the maid servant in Srivas Thakur's house was called Dukhi. Now why would some parents give the name Dukhi? They think that if he or she is Dukhi, Yamaraj would not have his glance on her. Hey, spare her. That's a tradition. So Dukhi was a very, very pure soul, and his spiritual master, Hridaya Chaitanya, recommended that for higher learning, he go to Vrindavan and learn under the great Jiva Goswami. He arrived in Vrindavan. Very soon he became thick friends with Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya. Narottam Das Thakur was a disciple of Lokanath Goswami. Srinivasa Acharya was the disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, whose disappearance day we celebrated last week. So these three friends, these three Murti, they became very prominent in Vrindavan. Jiva Goswami was the main teacher, the Acharya for the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And he told this Dukhi, your seva would be to go to Kanana Kunda and get water every day. There is a well. So that he would do that. And by his service, getting water for the worship of Radha Krishna, Srimati Radharani was very pleased with him. And one day, while cleaning that area with a broom, something caught his attention. There was a bangle. Now, no ordinary bangle. It shone like it had some otherworldly effulgence. There was a piece of cloth nearby, which was also resplendent. More than just the sight of getting something valuable, the sweetness of these two articles really filled his heart with love. And he knew that this is something very different from the ordinary. He decided not to tell anyone, lest people might not understand. And the next day, the news broke out that one of Radharani's golden bangles is missing. And he became like suddenly so frightened that, hey, it's with me. And if I show it to the pujari, then it will be big misunderstanding that did you steal it? So he was not knowing what to do. The next day, while he was doing the same service, a girl came and said she is a gopi from the nearby village. And her friend, there was a daughter-in-law who was just married, new daughter-in-law, introduced to their household, and she lost her golden bangle. Now, Dukhi Krishna was quite smart. So he said, so what do you want from me? Well, you are the one who cleaned this area, who cleans. So did you find it? He said, yes. So please hand it over. He said, on one condition. I would like to give it to your lady, myself. So Vishakha Devi understood that this person is quite smart. She said, yes, you have to take bath first. As Dukhi Krishna entered the kunda, he came out with a changed body. He had a body of a gopi. And then with that bangle, he went with Vishakha Devi and found that just behind the tree, there was Radharani hiding. He offered her pranam. Radharani put some kumkum on that bangle and made a tilak, which was very different tilak, and said, now you can go back. As he came out of that, he was again in the Dukhi Krishna, so-called male body. He was very happy, and of course, one thing she said, from now on, your name will be Shyamananda. And he was very happy. So he came back, he told Jiva Goswami that such and such things happened. He said, okay, now you have told me, don't tell anybody. And if somebody asks you, hey, what is strange tilak? Just keep quiet. Very soon the news reached Hriday Chaitanya, his guru. Your shishya, your disciple, he has given up your name, the name you gave him. He has given up his tilak too. Now Hriday Chaitanya was very angry. He says, how can he do like that? So fretting and fuming, he went all the way to Vrindavan. He saw him. Seeing his Guru Maharaj, Dukhi Krishna, now known as Shyamananda, he came, rushed towards him and wanted to offer him obeisances. He caught him and started striking him. This is not just plain misunderstanding, it was serious stuff. And people are saying, please, please stop, don't do like that. But of course, as a guru, people thought he may be right. And it was, and Dukhi Krishna was not saying anything. He said, why did you give? Why did you give up? All the things I gave you, the name and the tilak. That night, Hriday Chaitanya could not properly rest. But then Radharani herself came in his dream and said that, look, it is not his fault. This is how everything has happened. Oh, and the next day he just went and here now the spiritual master is offering pranams to his disciple. And he's saying, no, you are my Lord and Master eternally. And then everything was settled and he went back. Second instance is once Jagadananda Pandit. This is a very fiery personality. He was very temperamental. He wrote a book called Prema Vivarta, The Transformations of Divine Love. So he said that I was requested to write something for the benefit of humanity. And he said, I am not going to do that. I'll just write something which gives pleasure to my heart. Since I am eccentric. Now imagine an author candidly saying all this before even he has written the book. But that book has some very important instructions. One episode which Jagadananda Pandit describes, he had a deep respect, such deep respect for Sanatan Goswami, whom he really loved, that this person, such a great soul, and now he is serving Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan. So one day he saw Sanatan Goswami had wrapped a saffron cloth. So he came and he said, I am so happy. This must be Mahaprabhu's Mahaprasad, right? Because Mahaprabhu was sannyasi, he would wear saffron. But Rupa and Sanatan Goswami and other Goswamis, they would wear white, the cloth of a Babaji. So he said, this must be Lord Chaitanya given you some Mahaprasad. Sanatan Goswami, true to his nature, politely said, no, actually, there is a sannyasi called Mukunda Saraswati and he gave it to me. And God, Jagadananda Pandit became fiery. He said, you are such a dear servant of Lord Chaitanya. Everyone looks up to you. Anybody could have thought that this is a present from Mahaprabhu. And here you are, getting some cloths from some Mayavadi sannyasis and wrapping around your head. He didn't know what to do. He took a pot, which is meant for cooking, and came out to, he rushed aside and wanted to strike Sanatan Goswami with that. Laughing, Sanatan removed that cloth and said, this is exactly what I wanted to see. He said, what? He said, I have heard that the way you love Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so deep and it's so pure that it can't be compared with anything. I just wanted to get a taste of what that love is. And of course, then Jagadananda Pandit kept his thing down. So in these two things, when Hriday Chaitanya's spiritual master had some misunderstanding, or here Jagadananda Pandit had some misunderstanding, what is the nature of this misunderstanding versus what you and me encounter almost daily in our lives? So here comes the understanding that Krishna, in Bhakti Yoga, he gives these kind of examples, but because Krishna is pure, he cannot use any impure personality. He uses his own pure parshadas, his own servants, his own confidential associates, and they enact these pastimes. It's not like they have something against each other. So here too, Parvati Devi, Lord Shiva, and even to some extent Chitraketu, their lives are controlled by some higher order. If we miss this point, we'll have a big misunderstanding. We will miss the whole point. So misunderstandings in spirit, in material life are due to ours being conditioned by the modes of material nature, because we are having four defects. Sometimes we may not be able to understand even what caused some misunderstanding. Now, we are not exactly interested in Shakespeare, but just to give a small example, he wrote this Romeo and Juliet, famous play about so-called eternal love. There are two families, and these two families, they're having some misunderstanding, and they are at such loggerheads with each other. The moment one family sees a member of the other group, they just try to kill him. And if you ask the current patriarchs, the fathers or the uncles, did you start this? No. But my father on his deathbed said, if you see any of those guys, kill him. Okay, so your father's father must be having this problem. No, I think he also said when he was a child, he never knew why we fight. So this was one of those classic fights where no one really knows how it started. But there is this big animosity. So that's the way this material world is. As Radharan Maharaj once brilliantly put it, you have malaria now, you are shivering, feverish. And if you want to find out which exact mosquito bit me, till that time I am not going to take any medicine. No, it will be too late. So therefore, the cure for material misunderstandings is not to actually go on a detective hunt and try to find out what exactly happened. The best course is given in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna tells Arjun, just listen to this. Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunya bhava Arjuna nirdvandva nitya sattvasto niryoga kshematmavan. Traigunya vishaya veda. Krishna says, I gave the Vedas, but they are mostly dealing with three modes. Mostly. How many verses constitute Vedas? 1 lakh. That means 1 and then 10 zeros. Of those many verses, say 99% are dealing with karmakanda. So it's all karmakanda. Generally speaking, when there is a misunderstanding and somebody is suffering, you try to find out what has happened. And the first level, the first therapy, not exactly first therapy, but the first recourse is to take some karmakanda thing, go to some, like we see in train or in some magazines, what kind of problems you have. And they know what kind of typical problems people do have. Business not running well, family matters, legal problems, health problems. Visit some so-called Baba or some powerful Rudraksha beads. Now that's not even karmakanda, by the way. It's even lower than that. It's outright cheating. But proper karmakanda is try to understand, because of some misunderstanding, somebody is against me, my enemies, and I'm losing my business or my peace of mind or my money. Okay, do some puja. Do this. At least your mind will be preoccupied with something else. Those who are finished with karmakanda, in a sense, they know that this is a temporary relief for an equally temporary problem. Why people rush to karmakanda? Because there is no realization that this problem is temporary. Material life means people think all my miseries should go out like this and all my happiness should stay with me all the time. Intelligent people know it's not going to happen like that. So jnana kanda or upasana kanda begins when you ask the biggest question, Brahma Jigyasa, you ask about transcendence. knowledge is a great soother. Knowledge is a pill which helps you. For example, if you take a medicine and you are not told that you will have side effects like vomiting, you feel, hey, I feel worse. But if the doctor tells you, you'll get, this medicine will work on your disease, but you'll get at least two or three violent vomits. After that, you feel, okay, I was expecting it. So this knowledge helps you. Similarly, Gyanakand deals with the questions of life, how life is temporary, either problems will be this way or that way, and that helps. But of course, it doesn't weed out from the root. For that, we need Bhakti Yoga. And in Bhakti Yoga, we have interaction between the Lord, His devotees, between the devotees and devotees. And there, if we have some misunderstanding, Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear. In fact, there's a very bold statement. In one purport, Prabhupada says, when two devotees have a misunderstanding, it should be taken as spiritual. You may say, what? Now, before someone jumps to the conclusion that, okay, I had something with someone yesterday and now that's spiritual, right? Well, not exactly like that. The case of the acharyas disagreeing with each other. We find one acharya saying like this, other says, no, it's like that. We say, was there some problem between them? No. Krishna is infinite. Some of his aspects are seen here, some aspects are seen from other angles. So mostly acharyas see different angles and then they put it in front of us. But the way we really understand the importance of these events is when we realize that in spiritual life, misunderstandings also have a purpose, so that we get over our conditioned nature. In a verse, in the fourth canto, where Lord Vishnu is addressing the Kumaras. Now just see what the Lord is telling the Kumaras. That these two servants, Jay and Vijay are two security guards of a particular gate in the spiritual world. Four sages who are just like four innocent boys, 5 years of age. They approach that gate, and strange enough, these two guards say, you can't enter, stop. They become angry. They curse them. You are exhibiting behavior which is befitting somebody's in the material world. Better you go there. And they realize that, hey, it could be true. And the Kumaras don't understand, how did it happen? Why did we curse? We never do like that. So the guards are flabbergasted as to why such a big curse or such a small thing. The people who cursed are not understanding how come this happened. And there when Vishnu comes, Lord Vishnu, and he sort of pacifies both parties, he says, these servants of mine, they might have done something wrong, but please forgive them. Because I am very eager that they should rejoin my service the soonest. That is the time when the Kumaras realize that actually, Prabhupada writes in the purport, that the Supreme Lord is more anxious that conditioned souls return back to Him than a particular living entity is eager to go back to God. So therefore, coming back to this incident where Mother Parvati is criticizing Chitraketu, later it will be revealed that when Lord Shiva she curses him. What happens when somebody curses in this material atmosphere? You get a counter curse. That's the Trigunya. This also is noticed in so many Vedic literatures. That some king curse another king. When Kshatriyas fight, no fight can start unless there is cursing first. Isn't it? First the words. They say the tongue is only one limb of our body. But that one limb, if we can do something, 32 other limbs are at risk. 32 teeth may be knocked out. Now teeth are strong, they are solid. The tongue is soft, pliant, just some muscle. But something coming out of the tongue and all 32 may fall. So misunderstandings do arise. Primarily because of the nature being conditioned. Because of quarrel. And especially this age. Material life means having misunderstandings. And Kali Yuga means it's like a super mall of various kinds of misunderstandings. You never know which knot to solve first. Have you tried sometimes naughty things? You try to untie one knot and you find that I can't do it unless I untie this one and this one and this one. It all begins. There's a story of the Gordian knot. Maybe Greek history or something like that. There was this knot and who could untie it would get a benediction of being a great hero. So this one big warrior, he came there, he saw the knot and everybody was saying, how could he untie it? He just took his mighty sword and slashed it. And people said, hey, we never knew this could be done like that too. So therefore, granthi is a knot, a hard knot in the heart. And at least I have never seen any verse which says that, so if you do this, it will untie those knots. No, it always says bhidyate hridaya granthis. Bhidyate, bhed, you cut them. Our life is not meant for untying knots. We came with few, we are living in a knotted atmosphere, and by our dealings we are creating further knots. Like take one end of a thread, another end of a thread, put them like this. You hold this, somebody says, drop it. You say, no. He pulls it, there is a knot. Isn't it? So, unless you control both ends, sometimes as a hobby, you also do it yourself, then find, oh, it's a knot, now what to do? So, some problems are self-created, some by others, some by society. How many knots are we going to untie? We may have this feeling that if I just sort of a few problems get over and then I'm free for spiritual life. No. That you can be assured. Whether you get spiritual life or not, there is no assurance. But a few problems over and you're ready for God can never happen. Therefore, in material life, people try to do karma kand or jnana kand. Just try to get over these problems. But in the spiritual examples, Hriday Chaitanya, Dukhi Krishnadas, never retaliated. Sanatana Goswami knew this is a kind of jest, no retaliation. This is what we will see Chitraketu doing. For Chitraketu, life at this moment is like that snake and ladders game. You start from one, he was a king, and then go all the way up to 97. And then there is one. And one is a snake. And all the way you come back to square one. He's a leader of the Vidyadharas. Highly evolved people. More advanced than human beings. Super knowledge about transcendence, about music, about everything. From that, Parvati is saying that you become a demon. A man-eating that too. She's very specific. Let him become a man-eating demon. an asura, a rakshasa. He has his wits. Not exactly wits. The foundation is, whatever happens is by Krishna's mercy. Krishna is the supervisor of my life. I was just trying to put these two verses in front of each other. Nistraya Gunya Bhavarjuna. Nir Yogakshema Atmavan. Krishna is saying, don't try to add things which will make your life comfortable, yoga. Don't try to preserve things which make your material life secure. In the 9th chapter, Krishna says, Yogakshemam Vahamyaham. I carry what my devotees lack, I preserve what my devotees have. So, Krishna is not providing us knowledge, or Krishna is not a god who says that give up everything and serve me and that's all and be happy with your service. No. People feel that if I serve Krishna, what about me? What about my family, my business, my nation, my this, my that? Prabhupada says Krishna is the one main switch. You pull that down, everything will start working. The chandeliers, the fan, the microphone, everything. You put off that one main switch and then you fiddle with everything, nothing will work. So, since Krishna, not to use the word manipulates, orchestrates, like a music conductor, you know, orchestra conductor, how he tells someone to stop, then he says the choir to start, and the pianos, and the violin, and the harp. So similarly, Krishna, in his eagerness to get his devotees back, he does anything for them, including causing some misunderstanding. So when Lord Shiva, I'm just going a little bit further and we'll stop. When Lord Shiva tells Parvati that, okay, you cursed him, and you saw what he did? Smilingly, he came down from his plane, bowed down before you and said, so be it, mother. If you still think that I laughed at your husband out of spite or I criticized him, then I'm sorry. But whatever you curse, let it be so. Then Lord Shiva starts glorifying ideal Vaishnava behavior and Vishwanath Chakravartipad remarks that Parvati became so ashamed, she covers her face with the edge of her sari. And oh, what did I do? So seemingly innocent kind of incident, but it has great repercussions, great lessons for sadhakas, that misunderstandings will come. Surely they will come. They are the hallmark of our life. What we do with them, that's the clinching factor. Whether we accept it as Krishna's mercy, Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's mercy is the later stage. That Krishna's arrangement. Many times we feel that everything was going on so nicely, that means Krishna was helping me. And suddenly, something happens. And was it that someone else took over from Krishna? Was it somebody else? Theologians are grappling with this subject of evil. Where does it come from? If God is all good, then there can't be any evil. Like one famous Christian theologian, he said God is all-powerful. God is all good. Evil exists. He says only two of these statements can be true. These three can't coexist. If evil exists and you say God is all good, then poor fellow is not all-powerful. God sends you his best wishes that Mr. So-and-so, I know your problems and I'm with you. You say, what are we doing about it? My best wishes. Or, if you think evil exists, God is all powerful, that means He's not all good. And you pray to God, and He says, oh, I received your prayer, and when and if I get some time, I'll attend to it. You mean that means He's not good? Now, this looks like a classic triangle which can't be broken into. It's like a phalanx, it's like a viewer, a military viewer. You can't break in. What is the Vedanta's answer to this big problem of evil? This became such a big problem that there was a new discipline which was manufactured to just attend to it. Theodicy. Theology is study of religion, and theodicy is only study of this particular thing called evil. And then the more you try to understand evil, 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 it becomes such a big burden on you. There is a very famous naturalist. This fellow has done research on plants and animals and life of the penguins, and very world famous personality in the UK. He was asked by admirer. Somebody said, I admire your work. Last 55 years, since the age of 20, you are producing these kind of movies, educational movies. You have seen the best of what this material nature has to offer. You have seen volcanoes just about to burst, erupt. But you have seen you are showing us the machinery. What about the creator behind the machinery? Aren't you amazed that this particular animal migrates to this particular land and his food is there? Or this is just a minor miracle. In his documentaries, he talks of so many miraculous things. What about the person behind it? He says it doesn't exist. I'm an agnostic, he said. Somebody said, why? Why do you say you're an agnostic? He said, look, this was Zimbabwe, a country in Africa. Floods had occurred. I was visiting one flooded area. A whole slum was washed away. People were just homeless. And there was one sickly child, maybe 3 months old, was just kept on the beach. Parents were just scrounging for food somewhere. I saw a worm eating that baby's left eye. Now, this is how he makes everything very dramatic. And he said, if you say this all-knowing, all-powerful, omnipresent God who controls the entire universe, He only has this one place to put that worm? Can't He put it somewhere else? So looking at this evil, I don't believe that there is a intelligent person up there somewhere. Things happen by chance or by accident. Vyasadev tells us that when he, in his trance, saw something, what did he see? He saw Ishvara, the controller, and he remarks, Maya tad apashraya. He didn't say that I saw Krishna, God, all good, all pure, all truth, wisdom, all the good things put together, and his opposite, evil, side by side. They can't exist side by side. If you want to see the sun, you can. It's now only 9:30. You can go out, provided there is no clouds. You can see the sun. You say, I want to see the shadow. But there is no shadow in the sun. It's pure brilliance. It's luminous like anything. What are you supposed to do to see the shadow? What are you supposed to do? You have to turn your back to the sun. And now you can see shadows, shadows, shadows everywhere. So evil is the shadow of God. But God has no shadow of His own. There has to be something, you here, and then there's a shadow. There is no evil in the spiritual world. It can't exist. Like there are no shadows existing on the sun planet. So evil is not a competitor of God who is trying to mess up with your life. At the same time, evil cannot exist without God. Shadows don't exist without the sun. There are no shadows at night. Only when there is a light, there are some shadows. So therefore, when Krishna says, I am the controller of everything, I am, I create everything, does it mean that he creates the particular misunderstanding or the evil in your life? Not exactly. He says, for you in the material realm, there is this film of Maya, a very thin film. But that's what makes the difference of about everything. You remove this film and you can see me. Srila Prabhupada once remarked, when devotees were seeing Vrindavan Dham and not able to appreciate it, Prabhupada said, just like somebody's eye can be covered, the capacity of the eye can be covered by a small cataract. The cataract is not like the outdoors, big. It's just big enough to cover your own eye. And then you say, I can't see anything. Similarly, Maya, all powerful, but not for Krishna. And her power is not to create something outside. Her power is to sit here and do something here. So the illusion of evil, well, you can say the reality of evil rather, is a temporary reality. It has no substance. It is only shadow. But just like an ignorant person can mistake a rope for a serpent and can get the fright of his life, you can see perspiration. He will never touch it. But if you say, hey, it's a rope, it's not a serpent, wake up. So that needs to be done. So therefore, we see the examples of these great souls, and in our particular theme today about how to deal with misunderstandings. First of all, they say it's Krishna's arrangement, it's Krishna's mercy, and then whatever comes, there is this firm faith. Whatever happens in my life, Krishna has given his word. He is more anxious to sort out the matter than I can with my own limited understanding. So Chitraketu, while he got this big planet with beautiful women and singing, and that's also described, that he described as an intermediate benefit of his spiritual career. Just like it's a marathon race and they are providing some nice refreshments, you don't find the participant just say, hey, it's a nice cola drink or nice oranges is being served here. They take it, but they're running at the same time. Similarly, we will also be tempted with some intermediate benefits. You might be a project leader or a temporary president of some temple or whatever. But at heart, if we have this thing that Like the first person to ask Prabhupada that, can I take initiation from you? Prabhupada said, yes, your name will be Krishna Das. And then Prabhupada added, actually everybody's name is Krishna Das. We might have different names just to have some variety and to distinguish between each other. But actually the only name the living entity can really aspire for is Krishna Das. So to end, we'll end with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's classic exaltation. Jeev Krishna Das e Vishwas Karle To Aar Dukh Nai. If you just have this Vishwas, this faith that I am Krishna's eternal servant, no miseries exist, no misunderstandings exist. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anyone would like to add something? Comments, criticisms, corrections? questions? I hope there is no misunderstanding about what I said. Grantharaj Mad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki.